This is Sports Talk with Joe Smith, live from Yogi's Grill and Bar at the corner of 10th and Indiana. And now, here's Joe Smith.
Well, indeed, wrapping up our final Tuesday night of September, and a Hoosier team laying a solid foundation towards the month of October and beyond. The IU Field Hockey Hoosiers, a first-year head coach, Amanda Janney. The start to the Big Ten season last weekend couldn't have been any sweeter. A sweep of not one but two nationally ranked Big Ten teams in Iowa and Northwestern, and Big Ten recognition coming from the office up in Park Ridge today for a couple of players that will certainly spotlight here a little bit later tonight, as Coach A.J. joins us for a peek back and a look ahead a little bit later. New duties for our own Mike Lascott, one of the new contributing writers for Golf Week magazine. We'll take a peek at what he's doing with his new duties and a glance back to the 2015 PGA season. Jordan Spieth's record run to the FedEx Cup Championship, and by that I mean total purses for this year one in 2015, the wraparound season soon to begin, the upcoming President's Cup over in Seoul, South Korea. So a lot going on, little field hockey, little professional golf. There are table sitters as we welcome you to Sports Talk. We are live from Yogi's, along with our producer Jim Ritter, high atop our studios downtown at One City Center. Joanna and Mike Lascott. Yeah, we got glass working on two different fronts tonight. All of our sponsors. Hi again, everyone. Joe Smith and AJ joins us. We brought her in here last May. She had been on the job, maybe 3 months, AJ. Things were, spinning around in your head, and you were organizing your staff. You were getting ready and had played a couple of spring matches. But, boy, so far so good. A lot has been going on here since the last time we talked at Yogi's.
Our Big Ten conference season, and we're so excited to be 2-0 in conference right now.
Well, I tell you, you and I had sat down and talked last week, and you had a feel after the Ball State game, and this was one I'm not going to say you struggled, but you had a couple of losses mixed in there after a terrific experience for the women out to the state of California. We'll embellish on that in a minute, but boy, the Ball State game, four goals, all corner kicks, I believe. Just talk a little about maybe a jump start. You really needed that to, bolster confidence, not that it was down any.
Sure. We had a great trip to California, but we didn't come away with the wins against Stanford or California, and to come back home and to beat Ball State and score four goals is great for our team. That we have a really potent offense who's scoring a lot of goals, and to get four goals against Ball State put us in a good position to be ready to start our Big Ten games.
I said corner kicks. They were penalty corners. Is that the same thing?
Penalty corners are field hockey.
I'm just trying. Hey, you got me excited about this. Not that I wasn't before, but it's just great to see the women get off to such a great start. But anyway, you had 13 of those penalty corners in that that Ball State win where you scored four goals, and four different women scored goals. You got a lot of help.
Yes, our attack has been great this year, and to have so many different players able to score goals for us at any moment puts us in a good position. And to earn that many penalty corners in that game was a good start for us. And our corners being dangerous, that'll take us a long way this season.
Well, we go back to you were hired in February, and you hired your staff. You've been a veteran coach. It's not like you're some rookie. You had great success at Temple for a decade. Come here, and the whole transition. It has been a smooth transition for you. Now you're settled in Bloomington, and your team's playing like you want them to see play.
Yes, for them to start so strong this weekend was just really rewarding to see them. After a good spring season where we really worked hard, the team played well, but we didn't have those kind of crucial big wins that we needed this spring. So to see it come in conference when it matters, just very, very proud of my team right now.
There was a culture, I guess, if you want to call it. You have been very, very good. It's been a passion of yours since you've been a little girl growing up around the sport of field hockey, and it was really catching it. You don't come into a new job completely changing the culture, but you incorporate your own thoughts and ideas. Talk a little about that concept and how well it was received by the women.
The team has just really taken to some of the changes, and it's such a talented team of really smart, hardworking young student athletes who are ready for some change, and they want to win games, so they were ready for the change, and I think there's so many great things already happening within the program and great traditions since this team feels like he started in 2000. The last 15 years, they've done a great job to position themselves, and I think for me to come in and make some culture changes, some different strategy changes, the team is just working hard. They've really taken to it, and now it finally paid off on the scoreboard to see some wins over Northwestern and Iowa.
And, I mean, you're out there on the turf at the complex, and you got a stick in hand, and I mean, you've not lost zeal just because you're a head coach. I mean, you get out there and have at it with them, huh?
I'm trying. Sometimes I find it easier to demonstrate, so I'm fortunate enough that I'm still able to get out there and play. Actually, our assistant coach, Ayla, dressed out in gold cage today. She kind of showed them how it's done and made some good saves. And as coaches, it's important for us to be role models in everything that we do. So to get on the field and play hard and also to coach well, it's important for us to be good role models, and our team is stepping up.
Well, I think, too, and so much, and you find that in any sport, you play like you practice. And
right.
You've incorporated, AJ, the teamwork aspect of not so much just going off and, you know, coach works with the goalies, then the forwards, then the mids, and what have you. It's all one as a team, and you take that concept on into your matches.
Absolutely. We've really been preaching about teamwork, being selfless, and really working hard for the teammate next to you, and find ways to work hard so the girl next to you looks even better, to work hard, make a pass, that the assists are just as important as the goals, and paying attention to those little details are really paying off in games.
You know, take a glance back as you got ready for the regular season after a very productive spring. What's been the most surprising aspect that, you know, you take a step back and say, you know what, things are headed in the right direction now that you've got 9 games in and that nice 2-0 slate in the league?
There's a lot of coaching decisions you have to make, and you never know if they're going to work or not. So for me, we made a couple position changes right before Friday's game, and I kind of keep my fingers crossed and my thumbs pressed, hoping that it works, and the team really took it well. So we moved Taylor Pearson from a center mid to center forward, and she scored 2 goals this weekend. So we're very happy that strategy change worked, and some other position changes are really working in our favor.
You mentioned her. She's only a sophomore, and she tacked on an insurance goal after Kate Barber gave you the how important was that in the Iowa match, for instance? It was late in the first half. You went in with instead of being 0-0, it was 1-0. She popped a goal in. How important was that to generate some momentum for the second half?
The first goal against both Iowa and Northwestern were so important for our team that in the games that we have lost in the past, the last two, we got scored on early, and we were already down 1-0 in some of the other matches. So for us to go into Big Ten play, get the first goal against Iowa, the first goal against Northwestern, go into halftime feeling good about what we did for the first 35 minutes, it puts us mentally and just with our confidence ready to go in the second half.
You know, it's interesting, too, and I'm kind of a stat guy. Sometimes you can read in and get storylines from stats, but off of just what you said, going into the Kent State and Michigan road trip, Kent State, of course, will be here Friday. You've allowed only 6 shots on goal in the second halves now of games, and you've outshot your opponents 11-6 after they've outshot you 12-11. Tells me the defense has taken hold, so the longer you play, the stingier you're getting.
That's right, and I think that's a great sign of greatness of our team, that they're smart, they're able to figure out the other team in the first half, come out even stronger in the second half, and know how to make changes that are going to help us win that game.
How tough was it to incorporate your style? You talked about changing that, and you mentioned Taylor Pearson as being one, but a lot of women, a lot of your players have been undergoing position switches, and, well, as they say, so far, AJ, you're punching all the right buttons here.
Yeah, we've moved a lot of players around. We're Karen Lurite, and just a fantastic dribbler, really skillful player. She was in the backfield last year playing right back. This year she's playing opposite at left forward. She's scoring great goals for us, and then other players like Kate Barber, she's such a talented player, but we've moved her back to center back. That's really paid off for us. And then Sydney Supika, one of our most experienced seniors in the backfield, she's playing a side back this year, which is a little different. But they've all really taken to those position changes, and they know they're willing to do anything to help the team win, and it's really paying off right now.
Well, I know there was a lot of happiness after the Iowa win, obviously, to begin the season 1-0. And as we said right at the outset, you hadn't won, Indiana had not won back-to-back conference games in 9 years. But then you got ready for Northwestern, and again, you went from number 16 to number 14. Talk a little about how your approach was getting them ready for another big one in the Cats.
It was a really fast turnaround. We told him the week prepping up to Friday's game that we needed to put everything in our power towards that Iowa game. Just use all your energy for the Friday game, really lay it out there and leave everything on the field. And they did that, and we had such a great celebration in Iowa. And just to see that passion, the love for the game come through in their celebration was great. And then to get ready for Saturday, we knew the momentum of that Friday win over Iowa would carry us into Northwestern. So we had a very quick preparation to get ready for Northwestern, but it paid off, and the team just really played great on Sunday.
Well, and a young lady, well, two of them that were very integral parts in both the Iowa and Northwestern wins, honored by the Big Ten earlier today. And mentioning goal scoring, we'll talk a little about Maddie Latino, and also let me see if Noelle Roter.
Yes.
Your goalie.
Our goalkeeper.
I'm working on her name now.
Yes, Noelle from Germany. She's just doing fantastic. And for her to win both Big Ten awards this week, the Defensive Player of the Week, and then also Rookie of the Week, it's great for our program to get to sweep the awards this week and get that recognition out of the Big Ten Conference. But so happy for those two players. They really have worked hard, and they deserve the recognition.
Well, we'll talk more about those two and more individuals on A.J. Janney's first Indiana University Hoosier field hockey squad. They'll be in action out at the complex Friday afternoon against Kent State, and then back on the road to Michigan on Sunday. We'll be back with AJ. Continue along our final show of September. My, how time flies when you're having fun. You're listening to Sports Talk. We're live from Yogi's. Welcome back, everyone. Sports Talk, Tuesday night, final show of this month of September. A very productive one for our guests tonight in our first segment, AJ Janney and her field hockey Hoosiers, as they are off to a 2-0 start. AJ, we were talking a little about Maddie Latino and also Noelle Roter, the young lady from Hamburg, Germany. Interesting story that you'd be surprised when your parents make the trip all the way over from Hamburg. That we have a Hamburg, Indiana, but it's just down the road in southern Indiana. This is a pretty good piece to come watch their daughter play.
Yes, we have great family support with our field hockey team, and it was so neat to see all the fans and family cheering for the players. But, yeah, Noelle's parents were able to make the trip from Germany to visit her, and I think she stepped up and played even harder. Knowing her parents were in stands, and same thing with Taylor Pearson. Her parents traveled down from Canada, as well as all the players from Pennsylvania, Kentucky, St. Louis, Michigan. We have such great family support from our families, and it's great to see them at the games.
Yeah, she had 11 saves on the week against a couple of rugged offensive teams, and certainly anchored that. When she looks out on the field, she sees the defense in front of her. How's the defense playing? Obviously, you're playing well to start the year with the gold yield and that stat we gave you about only six shots on the average.
Yeah, the defense is playing great this year, and it's been good to see because we do have some new players. We're Malia Fujisawa from California. She didn't play that much last season, but she's a starter for us this year, and she's stepping up. She's very aggressive. We're fortunate we have so many good defenders in front of her with Nora, Sydney, and Kate Barber, but Noelle is getting a lot of action. She's got a lot of shots, and she's just such a phenomenal goalkeeper. She makes some very amazing athletic saves, and she's kept us in games and given us a great position to win.
When did she acquire the game of field hockey? Is it hot over in Germany? Tell us a little about that.
Yeah, in Europe it's pretty neat where the kids start very young. As in America, sometimes they'll start in ninth grade and they don't get as much experience. So for our European players to come over here and bring such good experience that the kids start very young over there and they play until they can't. So they have a great club system in Europe where all ages play, and Noelle is playing in the top division in Germany. So she also plays for the under-21 national team in Germany. So she has great international experience and tournament experience where she's able to bring that to us and help us get better.
You know, we see Lynn Loring, the dean of Indiana coaches, do the same thing with European players on his tennis team. And this is obviously a pipeline for you because it is, from what I gather, a strong pool there, huh?
Yes, absolutely. USA field hockey is doing great in terms of their Olympic qualifying and things like that. But, yes, the European field hockey players are very talented. So we're fortunate to have a player, Karen from Spain, and then Noelle and Charlotte from Germany.
We talk a little about this team and its flexibility in the front, in the middle, and in the back. And Matty Latino, the offensive player of the week, couple of goals against the Wildcats, and had an assist against Iowa. And she's just a young sophomore out of Sacred Heart Academy down in Louisville.
Yeah, just an hour away. Matty comes from Louisville and just a phenomenal athlete and is really working hard for the team. She just made one of the greatest plays we've seen all season, that she hit a one-time ball to cross it to Nicole for the assist in the third goal against Iowa to really kind of put the nail in the coffin, make sure we got that win, and really have us, let us have a great celebration. And then her two goals against Northwestern were just really skillful plays. And she's an aggressive forward who actually made a position change from forward to mid to start the game for us against Iowa. And we needed her athleticism in our midfield, and it paid off. And she played great this weekend, so happy for her to get the Big Ten Player of the Week.
You know, you had great success while you were at Temple in the A-10, putting teams in the NCAA tournament, and that's on down the road. But being on the outside looking in, what was your general feel as you coached the Owls to the Big Ten? What, you know, give me a sense of the state of the Big Ten as you watched it as maybe an opposing coach, and now you're in it.
Sure. As an opposing coach and then also as a player, I went to Wake Forest. So from the ACC, we were always playing against the Big Ten team. So the Big Ten and the ACC have traditionally been the best field hockey conferences in the nation, and there's always great teams coming out of the Big Ten, where Michigan's won the national championship. They're always competing hard in the NCAA tournament. And with Maryland and Rutgers joining, that's really added even more strength to the Big Ten conference. So coaching against them, we knew anytime you play a Big Ten opponent, you're going to get a very a tough physical game, and you're going to play against some strong opponents, strong athletes. So now being a part of the conference, it's exciting to know that every game that we play is going to be a very difficult game to play because the competition is so good. And also every game we play, your RPI is going to go up higher because every team has a tough schedule, and it puts us in a better position to make NCAAs.
Oh, no question, and that's how vital. I mean, so we could sit back, and that was so key of what you did, because you talk about the RPI, and you knock off two ranked teams within the league, and it's got to bode well now and really give you a strong foothold with what is down the road in the conference here.
I hope so. I think from going from last place last year that the team didn't do well in the Big Ten Conference to getting in a position right now where 2-0 in conference, we're sitting at second place tied with Ohio State and Maryland in first place. We're in a position that we could go all the way in conference and win as many games as possible and really put ourselves in a position where we want to make the selection committee choose us for the NCAA tournament.
Now, I have the starting time with Kent State, 2 o'clock Friday, is that correct?
That's right, an early start on Friday, and we're hoping to get a good crowd out there to cheer on the Hoosiers.
You know, it's kind of interesting, and that is a weird trek through the state of Michigan. Sherry Dunbar-Cruzan and the volleyballers made that trip this past weekend, going to East Lansing and Ann Arbor. Here you have Michigan. I can buy that. That's Sunday. But then you got to go back the next week to East Lansing.
That's right. That's the Big Ten schedule that we were given this year. And the travel schedule overall has been fine, that we have a nice trip coming up to Maryland later in October that we're excited to go play them in American. But we had a great home schedule to open up with two home games. To put us in a position of 2-0, we'll take the travel later in the season. We're just fortunate that we had the two home games to start and put us in a position to win the first two.
And two home games as far as Big Ten is concerned with Penn State, now that we're getting ready, and October is going to arrive here on Thursday. Penn State on the 18th of October and Rutgers to close out the regular season. Mixed in between on the 11th, interesting team coming in from the eastern seaboard, so to speak. Syracuse coming in, and they won the national championship, didn't they, a couple of years ago, runner-up?
They were runners-up, and I think they're a very talented team. They're actually right now ranked number one in the RPI. They're undefeated, so to bring in such a talented team to play us late in October, it'll be a very tough game, but it's going to get us ready to play even better for Big Tens. And I think our team has shown so far that we step up against good competition, and we play. We can hang with any team in the nation, so to get another good non-conference game in there in the middle of season, it'll just make us better for November.
Yeah, and talking about the Big Ten, since that's the league we play and compete in, how neat is it? And we've talked about this. I've talked to you before about this. The Big Ten Tournament Championships, the 5th of November, right here in B-Town.
That's right. We're hosting Big Tens on our home field, the IU Field Hockey Complex, and We're excited. We've had some great crowds so far. We've had a lot of good cheering for the team. So we're hoping we have another outstanding crowd come November. And those two wins, I think it really helps secure a position for us in the tournament, so we know we'll be playing at home in front of our own crowd.
You have a checklist as you go in each practice, each week, as you scout your opponents and what have you. And we're talking with A.J. Janney, the field hockey head coach of the Hoosiers. But what needs to be sent forth or become consistent? As you now take an unbeaten record, you get a little bit of target on your back now with these Big Ten teams. But what needs to be consistent leading up to the Big Ten tournament if you're going to not pretend but contend for a title?
That's right. There's so many things in field hockey that the team is playing great right now, but there's still some mistakes being made on defense and things that we need to clean up and just make a little bit better. So from our attack scoring, making sure that we can score on our corners but also score some great field goals from different players is important. And then today in our practice, we really focused on defense, making clean tackles, and really staying aggressive so that we don't give up so many defensive penalty corners. So the team took to that and had a great practice today.
Well, I got that clause down in my noggin, and we'll see how long it stays there, penalty corners in field hockey. And we've got that down. We've got Noel Rotters, the outstanding goalie, and also the Big Ten Freshman of the Week, the Defensive Player of the Week, along with Maddie Latino, the Offensive Player of the Week. Not only did Noel win the Freshman of the Week, but she won the Defensive Player Award. So in essence, without this young lady from Maryland, from South Africa, Wilma Luce, you would have completely been a Hoosier sweep. But you'll take this, won't you?
Yeah, we're happy that our players got recognized in the Big Ten Awards. And field hockey is a sport, such an exciting sport to watch, so we're happy that our players got recognized this week.
Well, we know things are headed in the right direction. And AJ, always a seat here at Yogi's next to me to talk field hockey. And I know we wanted to get some of your women in, but on Tuesdays, they're busy right now, not with the books, but weight training. And that becomes, I think people can't overlook the fact that that's where games are won and lost too.
That's right. Actually, today, one of our captains, Kate Barber, was hitting the ball so hard. I was like, I asked her, have you been lifting weights a lot? Because I know the team is working hard, and right now they're with Coach Chris Virtue, who's what a passionate motivator Coach Virtue is. So he's working them out hard right now, and fortunate I'm able to be here, so thank you so much for having me tonight.
Well, AJ, anytime, and the best of luck. Kent State, 2 o'clock on Friday, and then the following home match will be against Syracuse, the Orangemen, coming in on the 11th, and then the Big Ten a bit later in the month of October with Penn State and also Rutgers. Keep it going, young lady.
All right, thank you so much.
Great to be a Hoosier.
That's right, go Hoosiers.
Glad to have you. A.J. Janney joining us, and when we come back, we'll continue along on a Tuesday night as we'll delve into the 2015 PGA season. We have a familiar voice with us. He kind of works on Tuesday nights, being our on-site producer, Mike Glascott. He's got some new duties with Golf Week magazine that we'll detail. When we come back, you're listening to Sports Talk. We're live from Yogi's. Welcome back, everyone, as we continue our conversation tonight. Our final show of September, moving into October on Thursday. Right now, about 24 minutes before the top of the hour. Don't forget, Great American Ballpark tonight, the Reds and the Cubs. And a little bit later this week, we have the Colts on Sunday. All kinds of things coming up. We have a little Wisconsin-Iowa football coming up on Saturday. By the way, the big screen right here at Yogi's. And I do want to make mention, we got late word from Fred Glass that the game Saturday is almost sold out. That IU Athletics right now, they're continuing to prioritize the student attendance by continuing to offer those 10-buck tickets for kids, for students, and that makes sense. But the student section, and we're looking at, nearly 12,000 in the stadium, so Athletics will continue to make available tickets to students at $10. By the way, the general public ticket price this week, $65. That's what it is. In the Big Ten right now, and with the sellout expected, fans again, arrive early. And Glass, you have to go through this. Mike Glascott joining us with Chuck in
Hi, everybody.
Big Ten, or rather our big Big Show Friday. How you doing, my friend?
Good, good. It's good to see the Hoosiers almost have it sold out. And
so I wanted to pass that along. But I'm hearing good vibes because you got a new gig, and it's with Golf Week magazine. Now, we know all about Golf Week because of our association with Lance Ringler, who is a contributing writer. You, and we've had you on several times from not only in the studio but here at Yogi's, Mike, to talk a little about the fantasy columns that you write, but talk about your new duties with Golf Week.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity, Joe. Well, obviously, our friend Lance Ringler got me involved with this a few years ago at Roto World, and at the time, Golf Week wasn't really into the fantasy angle, and there wasn't, quote-unquote, a need for that at Golf Week. So as the fantasy gaming world has grown, as its popularity has gained with the 3 million DraftKings commercials and FanDuel commercials you see every other time out and every show on television, Golf Week decided that they were going to spend some more time to put some more emphasis on it, and they approached me, and Lance obviously was the fulcrum behind that, and how could I tell him no after he set me up at Roto World the first time. So my time at Roto World was great, Joe. I couldn't work for better people. Brett Vandermark, the big boss, and Rob Bolton, obviously, behind the scenes there. Those are great people, and they gave me a fantastic opportunity. But to go work for a golf-only publication as opposed to Roto World, where they did basketball and NASCAR and soccer and baseball and everything else, to go work for a golf publication, even if it's just online, which is great. Golf Week's been around for 40 years, and they're a trusted name in the game, as Lance has told you a million times. We're Orlando North up here now, Sagarin. Lance and myself, so they're going to have to start moving the corporate meetings up here at some point.
Well, they move it right here to Yogi's if they want to.
Well, in June, Joe. I think we'll go down there in February if they want to.
Well, I tell you what, after my fantasy year, I need all the injection of influence I can receive from people that know what they're talking about. The load of the your work now. I know you you work tirelessly. I know, Glass, at what you did when you were with Roto World, putting things together. When you sit down and talk about a game plan for your weekly column as you glance at weekly tournaments, and we had a bunch of them. What do we have,
47.
47 this year.
Yeah, 47.
Give me your approach. How do you go about looking?
Well, it's a great question because I think even if you're going to play games or if you're just going to watch the tournament, what do you need to know? Well, it's simple.
Certainly.
You need to know where they're playing. Obviously, what style of course it is. There's a couple different courses, Joe. There's old-style courses that were built like Riviera or the Plainfield, New Jersey that we saw in the Barclays that were built a long, long time ago, Pebble Beach. And then there's courses that have been built in the 80s and 90s where maybe it's a little bit different setup. The change in scenery, perhaps. The greens are a little bit bigger. They're made for maybe more public events than they are just old-school golf courses. So you have to figure out what kind of course they're playing on. I think grass is very important as well. Some guys who grew up in the southeastern part of the United States play Bermuda grass very well. Guys in the Midwest and the Northeast play bent grass very well. Guys in Texas play bent grass very well. So what they're putting on. And then obviously the field. That's the key to any gaming success. And even when you're watching it on television, you want to know who's going to compete. You want to know who's got the best chance to win because it obviously makes it fun to pay attention to all that. Guys that are hot, who's played the course well, all that factors in. But I don't think there's tournament to tournament, we're dealing with human beings here. And each week, if it was just as easy to take the stats, plug them into a formula and spit them out, heck, we wouldn't even have it. Everybody'd win every week. So it's interesting to take all those factors and blend them and mold them together and then try to figure out who's got the best chances of playing well. We call them projections, Joe, not predictions, because a prediction is what you do with the weather. A projection is what you do if everything goes according to Hoyle. We don't have the radar models or anything like that. But you have to take the course. You have to take who's hot, who's not. You've got to take where they're playing and where they're at in the season. There are some pros who don't play well after majors. There are some pros that garner their whole season focused on majors. So you balance that all up, and you hope to find some clues on what's going to give you the best chance to make some noise in your games.
Now, will you have a comparable size column with Golf Week as opposed to Roto World?
Size matters, yes. Well, what we'll do is we're going to do a similar situation but just maybe a little different timing. Mondays, we'll have a wrap-up of the previous week, to let everybody know how their favorite guys did and how their guys and their teams and leagues played. the preview column, Joe, is really not going to change at all. We're going to talk about the history at the course, if the course had any changes in the last year or 2 years, where some of these events move around, and some guys will just say, hey, look at that. He won there 5 years ago. Well, the tournament's not there anymore, and you can win the tournament, but if it's not on the same course, that's different. And we'll look at all the players and preview that. And then Wednesday we'll have individual games that people play, whether it's one-and-done leagues, the Yahoo League, the Golf Channel League, you name it. DraftKings, obviously, is a huge supporter of Golf Week.
Yeah, it's
so we'll throw in some golf we'll throw in some lineups for that, where if people have questions on how to run that. And basically try to touch all the bases. The good news about fantasy golf world, it's person to person. You might have a league that's different than their league, but we're all looking at the same guys, and we all want to find the guys that are going to play the best. And I enjoy the research of looking at who's hot, who's not, who fell off a scooter last week, who got robbed in Hawaii, who just got pregnant, who just got married. Because, again, Joe, we're dealing with human beings.
Yeah.
We're not dealing with stats, and I think I find that to be fascinating in the research part of all of it.
Well, you have more tools, Golf Magazine, Golf Week Magazine being strictly all golf. Will you have more tools for research?
Yeah, they have four guys that are on the tour writing week in and week out. These are the guys that bump into guys on the range and say, hey, how's the back feeling? Is your elbow feeling good? Hey, looking great on the putting green. Is that a new putter? What's working? That's the stuff you can't get in most places, because not every fantasy site or not every website can have guys on it. But that's what Golf Week does. That's why I thought the moving here would be a huge advantage, because they do golf for a living, and I'm just going to handle the fantasy. I'm not going to tell you what's wrong with your slice. I'm not going to tell you the seven best courses to play in northern Wisconsin. I'm going to get you ready to go for the PGA Tour game, the Pick 4 game, the Avis game, the Yahoo game, one and done on a weekly basis, and show you who I think guys have the best chance of winning. But having that extra resource of those guys on the ground at press conferences, bumping into caddies. Joe, those are reporters. They do that for a living. I can, you know, I can ask guys.
Sure.
I can call guys up. They're going to be who? Who are you? But to have that, the PGA Tour's got it. Golf Week has it. I don't know who else does.
Yeah, I don't know if you have to wear a badge, but you certainly have now been hired into a key that unlocks the a lot of doors for
resources,
you.
Resources. And those guys have been on and out there for a while, too. They're established with relationships, with tournaments, with caddies, with courses. And, yeah, it's just a great positive, and I'm excited to get started here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, you know, I know Lance always comes in, and Lance in particular does a bang-up job for both men and women collegiate golfers over the years. And he brings in – is Golf Week magazine weekly?
It is
Golf
weekly,
Week.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure it's a weekly publication, because you won't see any of my stuff on there, and that's not a big deal, because the turnaround time is too quick to get the magazine printed every week and to have, you know, a Monday playoff. You have weather that pushes it on. But Lance and those guys, Golf Week is the college game. They're going to have didn't we see on the weekend they're going to have a tournament at East Lake, a match play situation? How cool is that? And if you like golf coverage, if you like college golf coverage, Lance Ringler's one of the best in the business with Brentley Romine and the other guys at Golf Week.
Mike Glascott joining us, a contributing writer now for Golf Week magazine, and in charge of the fantasy aspect of the game of golf, which has turned into it's just caught fire here over the last couple of years. Well, mentioning catching fire, after missing two cuts within the FedEx Cup, Jordan Spieth, we look at a final total, and that doesn't include what he won for the FedEx Cup. $12,030,465. In other words, that's a whole lot of bread. $22 million total for a 22, and he just turned 22 in the summer.
Yeah, he's pretty good, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
He didn't win last year, if I remember correctly.
No.
He didn't win. He had to win in 2013 because he was playing on sponsors' exemptions. And the only way he could get into the playoffs in 2013 was you have to win during the regular season. So he did that at the John Deere. He chipped in, won a playoff.
Yep.
And then plays great. And I think he finished T2 at the FedEx Cup Championship in 2013. Behind Stenson, who won by three or four shots. He blew the field away.
Right.
And then Spieth goes away as a 21-year-old and doesn't win a tournament, but wins $4.5 million. So, Joe, it wasn't like he disappeared off the map and came back. He just didn't claimed the biggest prizes. He was second at the Masters. He was second at the Players. He was awfully good, and then this year he was awfully great. The interesting thing about this new run of golf is 6 days ago we were talking about how Jason Day could possibly win Player of the Year if he would have won Eastlake, won his third out of four, and won the final major, winning 5 out of 7 to close the year. Well, Jordan Spieth took care of all of that nonsense and added the FedEx Cup and the Tour Championship to his two majors and his fifth win of the year. And the only guy to win five times in the last century was that Woods guy.
Yeah.
Besides Day and Spieth. And you get two of them this year. And Jordan Spieth, Joe, is 2 inches from a playoff at St. Andrews and was second at Whistling Straits. So he goes first, T4, because he missed a three-man playoff, second in the major championships. That's unbelievable. Ricky Fowler was the top five in all four last year, and everybody couldn't – that hadn't happened before. But when he's winning things like this, he's in the Woods stratosphere, and Day's right there with him. Imagine if Day was healthy, Joe. He collapses at Chambers Bay, he's a 54-hole leader.
Yeah.
Oh, the game of golf is great. We don't mention Woods anymore except in his historical preference. Phil Mickelson has kind of faded that way as well. This is 2 years in a row Phil hasn't won a tournament. So the young guys, and you haven't even brought up Rory McIlroy yet.
No, we won't.
We can do a whole day on Rory McIlroy.
Yeah, and
these guys are great.
And you know, even that's the thing. It's changed the whole all these youngins. These young guns coming out with so much talent, I mean, it's got to be tough week in and week out for you even to begin to, should I go with this
good,
second?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that makes for interesting.
It is, because who in their right mind wouldn't have put Jason Day number one last week after winning 4 out of 6 tournaments? But you know who was number two? Jordan Spieth.
Yeah.
You know who was number three? Well, Rory McIlroy. And Henrik Stenson, who went second, T10, and second, or T2. So he had three seconds and a 10 in the four playoffs as well. Not bad for a guy that's going to turn 40 next year.
Well, he'll be Player of the Year. Is that going to be announced here soon?
Should be, yes.
Yeah,
Rookie of the Year is probably a little bit more interesting because Daniel Berger was the only rookie to make the Tour Championship.
Okay.
Justin Thomas, I believe, had 9 top 10s on the year. Berger had 2 second place finishes. So that's going to be a quantity versus quality argument there. Is finishing second twice bigger than the consistency of 9 top 10s. Tony Finau's in that conversation as well. The only rookie to win was Canadian Nick Taylor. He did it so long ago, no one remembers.
Yeah.
He did it back in the fall of last year in the wraparound season. So all those will be announced this week. The players only vote on that, so that's not going to be hard to figure out because the players, 99% of them, value major championships over anything else.
Well, to give you some idea, again, as Glass mentioned, Jordan Spieth won 5 times, but he had 10 more top 10 finishes. And to give you some idea, he finished either first or second in 36% of his starts this season. And 2 of those, that's how he started out the FedEx Championship, missing 2 cuts, which he had never done in his brief pro career that is just taking off, and who knows? Congratulations!
Fantastic ball striker, fantastic putter, fantastic.
He got back
everything.
To work. He got back to work. He knew he got a little down on himself.
Well, you know what? The interesting thing about you bring that up, even if you're, when you're watching the tournaments, you're playing fantasy golf, Joe, is nobody's going to do it for how many tournaments did he play this year? No one's going to do it for 25 straight tournaments. There's going to be lulls. You can't expect these guys to go pedal to the metal for 6-8 weeks at a time. It doesn't happen. So that has to be a little part of your strategy moving forward as well. Because everything, Joe, that goes up has to come down.
Oh, yeah.
Jason Day wasn't exhausted last week when he was winning the trophy at the BMW, but the first thing he said off when he got off the course this week was, man, I'm tired. I've been winning too much, playing at too high of a level. Well, there's plenty of other guys that can come in and sneak in the back door.
Well, by the way, you're mentioning, Jordan Spieth and the rest of the fellas, they'll have another opportunity. It's not the Ryder Cup. It's not the Walker Cup. It's the President's Cup, Glass. And again, Jay Haas, who is the captain, U.S. will be trying to win it 6 straight. But the venue
won't
be here in the United States. They got a brand new, or it looks brand new, over in Seoul.
Yep, Jack Nicklaus Design Course over outside of Seoul and the Korean Peninsula. And the, what is this? It's every other year, or every year, it goes Ryder Cup, President's Cup, Ryder. So there's always an international match. And to be fair, the competition here, Joe, hasn't been much of a competition because the bottom part of our lineup is much, much better than the bottom part of the other lineup. In the Ryder Cup, it is Great Britain and Ireland, and Europe. Those folks can't play in the President's Cup, so you get the South Africans, the Australians, Jason Day, Adam Scott, Charles Schwartzel, Louis Oosthuizen. You get everybody from Southeast Asia and the rest of the world. That it does not include Europe and the British Isles. There are really good players from there, but they are not as good as the top Americans. If the Americans sent their B team over, it would be a better competition type event. But when you send Spieth, Bubba, Dustin Johnson, if Furyk's healthy, Zach Johnson, you can stop right there, and it doesn't matter who they're going to bring
that's
out.
That's formidable right there.
And then you add to it, it's a course that no one plays. No one plays that course, Joe. There's not a tour stop there, so nobody has any home court advantage. It's not like the Ryder Cup where you want to play it on a spot where you get a little bit either guys have played well on it or get some home cooking. And I wish, and I've been arguing with this online a little bit, I wish the President's Cup would take a different approach and take a guy like Brooks Koepka instead of Jay Haas or Bill Haas, Jay's son. It's not a knock on him, but if you're getting your rear end kicked in the Ryder Cup all the time, why don't you put some guys in some pressure?
New blood.
Some new blood in there.
Yeah.
And the argument I always got back is, well, we're trying to win this President's Cup, not the next Ryder Cup. And the argument I make is, no, we win every President's Cup. They've changed the rules to make it more competitive for the rest of the world this year. They've shrunk down how many guys have to play, so you don't have to use the back end of your lineup as much. But I say you got to bleed guys like Brooks Koepka and get them in the lineup and get them some experience in this. And some other guys that are right there on the cusp, but you think they're going to move forward. Billy Horschel should be playing in these things. I don't care what he's playing right now. He needs the experience because these guys in their early 20s are going to be wearing the red, white, and blue for a longer period of time than the guys in their mid-30s.
Got about a minute and a half, but what other branch of professional golf, the web.com Tour Championship is continue to whittle the field now. This is going to be on a Pete Dye course.
It is, I believe, in the Sawgrass,
Pontevedra, isn't it?
Pontevedra Beach, the Dye Valley course, I believe it is.
It is indeed.
And the top 25 in the web.com playoffs will join the top 25 from their regular season money and make up the next layer on the PGA Tour next year. And, again, Andrew Loop won last week. Joe, he's been on tour before, but his victory gets his card secure, and he's ready to go. And guys are fighting it out, and as we've seen in most of these tournaments. It comes down to usually the last two or three putts, and it will for the web.comers. So gamers, keep an eye on that because you will see some new and familiar faces coming up in 15-16.
Well, and Chez Reavy and even Lucas Glover among some of the top-rated five players, and they're reinventing themselves, or at least their game, as they're trying
to reinvent their card.
Reinvent their card to make a living. But some new names, sprinkled in, even along with some European names. So that's coming up this weekend?
The last weekend, and this is it. This is where the guys that don't have their card, if they had the status to get into these playoffs, this is it. If not, they go back to Q school and try to qualify for the web.com. It's a meritocracy, Joe. That's what makes it brilliant. It's not what color pants you wear. It's not what your dad did. It's how low you can go and how many times you can do it.
Well, and we are just so happy for you, Glass.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
Have an opportunity to write for a Golf Week magazine. We'll look forward to following that. And just a brief comment on, the Crystal Ball 20. We had 47 events. We had how many first-time winners this past?
11.
Okay.
And that's a little bit right in the middle. We've had 13. We've had 10. We've had... So first-time winners, not rookies, first-time winners on tour. Only one rookie winner this year, and that was Nick Taylor. So I think the class that will come up might give you some better options. Going forward, I think the interesting storylines is how much more money can Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, and Day win, and what do you do with the next generation? Jim Furyk's got a wrist problem. Phil Mickelson hasn't won a tour event in 2 years. Tiger Woods, my goodness.
Yeah.
Joe, it's a great soap opera as well. And, again, the fun part is it plays out on the field, it plays out on the course, not in the newspapers or the back pages.
Thank you, my friend.
Hey, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Mike Glasscock joining us, Golf Week Magazine. And when we come back, we'll close things out. You're listening to Sports Talk. We're live from Yogi's. Well, wrapping things up for a Tuesday, our final show of September, and congrats out to our Employee of the Week at the Barbecue Train, Shortstop Food Mart, my favorite place to stop right there at the corner of 10th and Smith, Sarah Flick, the Employee of the Week. Hey, thanks to A.J. Channing, the best continued success to her field hockey Hoosiers, again 2 o'clock against Kent State on Friday. And let's see, in the zone, Dave and Glass, your phone calls tomorrow night at 6. Reds coming up, hosting those Cubs, 7 o'clock here at the top of the hour, first pitch at 7:10. Our high school football game, the unbeaten South Panthers, Terre Haute North, Chalk Talk will be at 7. Don't forget the kick for this one at 7:30. For our producers, Jim Ritter, Joanna and Mike Glasscott, and our guests, A.J. Janney and Mike Glasscott, Joe Smith, have a great week. You've been listening to Sports Talk on News Talk 96.1 AM 1370 WGCL. Good night, everyone, from Yogi's.